Thank you a lot. We've been pretty lucky here, haven't we? Have y'all come out to this festival and not rain on us is two really nice things. And we appreciate them both a lot, but mostly y'all. We haven't always played at bluegrass festivals. There's another kind of music that you might not never hear of called folk music. And so it's a valid art form. And folk festivals, of course, are a lot bigger than bluegrass festivals, where like a festival like this have maybe 3,500 people. Maybe by the weekend it might even be 4,000 here. But at a folk festival, sometimes they have 40 or 50,000 people, they claim. And so, of course, all people that listens to folk music and goes to folk festivals and even recognizes the word folk music when they see it in print are real rich. And folk festivals has a thing called field workers. And what these field workers do is they go out and they look for the most ignorantest people they can find to be legitimate folk musicians. And one time some of them went out looking and found us. It turned out to be we've become folk musicians in this just this way. And they took us this part of Kentucky that you don't hear much from called Vancouver to a big folk festival out there. And right, on this part about folk festivals, they treat you real nice, but folk festivals are run by health food people. And a lot of authentic folk musicians, you know, don't really have much truck with health food. Like Ken Irwin, he's such a health food nut, he only puts one ice cube in a glass of water.
Whoa.
You got to think about that a while. I mean, I've been thinking about it for about 8 or 9 years, and I don't even get how it's connected to health at all. But out there at this Vancouver place, like, they had a bunch of black blues singers from the Mississippi Delta area and us, and all the singers was trying to steal enough pretzels at the cast parties make it through the next day for when they drag out that health food. Well, told you that to tell you this. They also have a thing called the cultural liaison officer, which is kind of like a chaperone, so you don't embarrass your own particular subculture. And we was sitting around this dormitory they put us in one day, and the cultural liaison officer come over and said, how would y'all like to go to the beach? Which we allowed us, how we wasn't doing nothing but looking at the walls of this dormitory, it would probably be better. And we went over. Now, for those of you that's never been there, I can tell you this. The North American continent drops off about 1,000 feet above the Vancouver beach. And we got over and commenced looking down. And a lot of people in this band never wanted to go down, even though some J.D. Crow-Manion men had been there and cut steps right in the stone to walk down this beach. Well, that's right. Me and Charlie said he'd go down with me, and we commenced walking down these steps, and we had gravity working for us. And we got down there about 500 feet, and of course our blood wasn't hardly oxygenated enough. We was out of breath, but we kept on going, determined to make it all the way down. And after about 750 feet, there was a bunch of bushes and trees and everything growing out of this cliff, and I looked over on one tree, and there was a sign that says, clothing optional at the following beach. And I was so naive, I thought, oh good, my old-fashioned bathing suit's not going to be too far out of style at this particular beach. We kept on going, and right down, you get down the bottom where the continent kind of levels out before it turns into sand, and there's a bunch of bushes kind of like a canopy. I know down in the country that's something we kept under the bed, but this was something like the sun couldn't shine through. And when you walk through there, like, you come out and the sun is glaring off the Pacific Ocean, and right as my eyes acclimated, I looked around, and just like that Indian that wanted to know where the sun come from, so he stayed up till it dawned on him. It dawned on me what clothing optional at the following beach really meant. And furthermore, I realized that me and Chuck was the only two people on the whole beach exercising our option. And I thought, I can handle this. I'm from pretty far back there in the sticks, but I can handle it. I seen a big drift log had floated up here on the beach. I thought, I'm going over there and kind of cower down behind this log and fold my clothes up on top of it in case I need them again. But Charlie had been 40 days in the jungles of Vietnam without a bath and had a whole different attitude towards clear, sparkling water than I had learned. And you could hear his clothes hit the beach with an audible whoomp. Tracks running off down there, and he's in the water, and I'm left by myself. And I'm going to tell you something that you might never have thought of. It feels just as bad being the only person on a beach of naked people with clothes on as it would if you was on there and everybody, if it was turned around. It's just as bad because how am I ever going to take them off now, I'm thinking. So I got this plan, see. I figured if I get out of my clothes real fast and run down the beach and get in that water about shoulder high, I'll be okay. And I executed my plan with great deftness. Oh, you might not know this. I didn't know this. The immutable laws of physics do not hold true in the Pacific Northwest, like even here in New York, which I realize is not as civilized as where I'm from. Excuse me, as uncivilized. Like when water gets down to 32 degrees, it turns to ice, don't it? And give you some kind of warning. But not out there. I'm out there up to my armpits. And suddenly I realized what they meant when they said all men are created equal. Well, I told you, I'd tell you this. It was at this folk festival where we met this guy named Cy Khan, who wrote this song about, this kind of a song about New York, because I don't know even if you knew this, but down where us rednecks lived in the slums of Appalachia was mostly agricultural land, and we would grow what we could. And right at the turn of the century, they had these guys called the robber barons, which lived in New York City, all except for one of them who lived in Philadelphia. And his name was Edward Berwyn. I always remember him because he built a summer cottage over at Newport, Rhode Island. Some of you probably seen it. It's called the Elms, yes. And he was a coal baron, and he thought people that worked in coal was not as good as regular human beings. And so he dug a tunnel from the edge of town into the Elms so people bringing the coal in wouldn't have to walk up above the ground where he could see them. How much coal do y'all use up here in the summer? Joke was on him. Anyways, these barons come down wanting to buy our land and pay us 6 cents an acre, and old farmers never wanted to sell. And so the robber barons told the farmers, said, y'all can keep the top 6 inches of your land. Don't touch a line like that. The farmers studied on it a while, and they allowed us how that's all the land they'd been using, and they sold out. And the barons come in and called out all the good timber, and everything would have been okay, except in 1919 a big flood come along and washed away our 6 inches. And that's when they started fighting the war on poverty right on our land. And in fact, my grandmother tried to surrender. She went down into Honeacre, Virginia, and went right up to courthouse, said, I understand y'all's fighting the war on poverty. And they said, that's right. She said, well, how come I'm still poor? And they said, well, you lost. She said, well, are you taking any prisoners? And they had this thing, some of you can remember this, maybe, because they had this thing called the Great Society, where they brought in commodities. I don't know if they probably brought them from here, because they took them to us. And the first commodities they brought in Russell County, Virginia, was bags of rice.
Good choice.
And they could have brought bags of stone for all the years. We had never seen rice before. Little old mountain granny ladies couldn't cook it. The hogs wouldn't eat it. And Uncle Wally studied on this rice for us. Now, us kids wasn't allowed to hang around with Uncle Wally because he was an atheist. And I thought that meant he could throw a ball with either hand. He studied on this for a while and figured what this rice was for was furniture. If a man or even a woman of a different gender or a female of the opposite sex sit on a bag of this rice long enough, it would get real personal with them and not sit nobody else as good. which is when they had a thing called the industrialization of the South, which is what this song's about.